You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Alex Dryden watched statues of Lenin pulled down all across the former Soviet Union in 1989, and he spent over 15 years since tracking the changes in Russia and the rise of Vladimir Putin. Now he's combined those experiences and lots of research into his first novel, a real page-turner called Red to Black, published by Echo. I'm very pleased that it brings Mr. Dryden to our show today. Welcome.
Hello, thank you.
Now, isn't Alex Dryden a pseudonym? Why have you had to use a pen name?
It is a pseudonym. If you read the book, you'll see that Russia can be quite a dangerous place, and you probably don't need to read the book to know that. But for a long while, I was intending to write it as a non-fiction book, and then I realized that all the information that I'd gathered over 15 years was so well-sourced that I couldn't use it.
Well, any number of Russian journalists have been killed, and it's one of the great disgraces of the current situation in Russia. But is a British journalist also under threat?
I think a British journalist would almost certainly be threatened, warned, told to leave the country, have his visa taken away. But the pseudonym is more to do really with protecting sources than protecting myself.
And who would be the ultimate threat here? Would it be government, or are we talking about the leaders of corrupt companies?
I think it's very hard to distinguish between the two because the intelligence services in Russia, who I routinely call the KGB just out of ease, are very tied up with big corporations and very tied up with mafias.
In fact, after the fall of the Soviet Union, weren't many of the top guys at the KGB suddenly industrialists and owners of companies?
Absolutely right. I mean, one of the curious...
They had the inside track.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the people who knew how to run business in 1989 when the Soviet Union collapsed were the mafia, and the KGB kept an eye on them and ran, as it were, a parallel state business, which eventually became very difficult to distinguish between.
Now, this the KGB is now called the FSB?
FSB.
It's had so many different names over the years. NKVD at one point.
And then the OGPU. And I mean, it goes right back. And the SVR is their new foreign service. And it's much easier to call them the KGB, I find. You know, initials never really go down very well in books.
Well, a lot of this book has to do with the fact that Vladimir Putin is a former KGB. In fact, didn't he go to KGB high school?
He did. I think from the age of 17, he was devoted to becoming a KGB officer and became, you know, possibly the most successful KGB officer ever in the sense that he's only the second head of the KGB to become president of either Russia or the Soviet Union.
Well, would people in the current KGB, whatever we're going to call it, tend to be more loyal to the state or to Vladimir Putin?
The KGB is a clannish system, at the moment the clan around Putin is dominant. One of the reasons that Medvedev is president of Russia at the moment and Putin is prime minister is that Medvedev was Putin's lawyer in Petersburg and has no other power base other than Putin.
Your narrator here is Anna, who is a member of Soviet intelligence.
That's right.
So this is not totally autobiographical.
No. I'm not a woman, and I've never been part of Soviet intelligence or Russian intelligence. But she's brought up in a KGB family, and I think she decides that in order to get the better of her father, she's going to be a better KGB officer than he was.
And KGB families were the way that it was done. If you were the child of somebody in the KGB, it was likely that you could get a legacy job?
It's a routine thing in Russia. It is probably up until recently in Britain, that's been the case.
MI5?
Yeah, or
MI6.
And maybe also in the CIA, I don't know.
Did a specific moment in recent Russian history inspire you to write this book?
Yes. I mean, not a specific moment, but a period of time in which I was there at great length in Russia and saw democracy apparently appearing for the Russian people for the first time in their history and being dangled in front of them, and then it was snatched away. And so I wrote Red to Black partly in sadness, partly in anger, that this great opportunity for the wonderful Russian people had been seized once again by the elite spies.
You have a disclaimer in the book that says the use of real names and events is simply to provide authenticity, but you've just told me that this is a Romano Clay and that much of it is based on real fact.
Yes.
With a couple of invented characters.
With some invented characters. And, you know, The Economist actually told me after their reviewer read the book that maybe now this was the only way you could write about Russia.
That's what Edward Lucas, the Central and Eastern European correspondent for The Environment, wrote. He said it's the only way you can spread the truth about Russia. That's because it's dangerous to do it any other way?
It's because it's dangerous, not only from a personal physical point of view, but it's dangerous from the point of view of being sued. And the Economists themselves have just had a huge case brought against them by one of Putin's stooges in Russia.
This is something that has happened throughout the world in recent years. People in Singapore and elsewhere have sued for libel whenever there has been an investigative report.
Yeah, it's a very dangerous thing for freedom of speech.
Early on in the book, you have a scene where a group of Russians ask a man flat out if he's a spy, and he replies with a joke. Are spies obvious in today's Moscow?
They're very obvious in Western Europe at the moment. In Vienna, for example, it's back to pre-Cold War levels. You see the head of different national spy stations walking past each other in the street, not acknowledging each other, even if they're on the same side.
So we could do a remake of The Third Man?
We could do. I quite agree. It would be an interesting prospect, that, yes.
The central character in your novel is Finn, who's a veteran MI6 operative. Did he grow out of people you knew or out of some of the more famous fictional agents like Lemus and Bourne?
He was partly came out of people I knew, partly came out of my own experiences in Russia, and was, you know, very largely a fictionalized idea of how I thought a British agent could be at that period of time when the barriers between the West and Russia had dropped. And it was less clear why we should be spying against Russia than it had been.
Well, how strong a presence does MI6 have in Russia these days? And is it as strong as the CIA's?
I wouldn't think so. But the MI6 has always had a strong presence in Russia. I don't know what the CIA presence is, but I'm sure it's always bigger wherever you are in the world.
My guest is Alex Dryden, or at least a man who's calling himself Alex Dryden. His book, Red to Black, is published by Echo, and it's more Le Carré than it is Stendhal, even though the title evokes Stendhal to some degree. And I don't want to reveal too many details because then I'd be spoiling the book for potential readers. This is a book that has a lot of surprises in it, and you wrote it as a page-turner, obviously.
Yes. When I decided to write it as a fictional novel thriller, it became clear that, you know, I had to fall into the demands of that genre.
How do you see the Russian state progressing now that Putin is at least nominally in a secondary role?
I spoke to a KGB officer on the phone recently, and he told me that Russia at the moment is becoming more centralized than it ever was, even under the Soviet Union.
Well, Medvedev keeps on sending out signals that he would like to see things loosen up a bit.
Yes, I never know whether that's just sort of chaff to throw to Western observers and critics, or whether he is genuinely whether he genuinely means it. There was a great story of a leader from a Central Asian country who went to the Kremlin and met Medvedev, and I heard this from a source in the Kremlin. And Medvedev said, why does your country opposition? Why do they hate Russia so much? And this national leader said he doesn't hate Russia. He hates Putin. And Medvedev apparently said, I know how he feels.
So how much independence do you think he'd have? After all, everybody assumed that he was put in there simply as a rubber stamp for Putin.
I think he does have influence. I think on the big questions, less so than on the small questions.
Well, I've heard a story that Putin regularly has late-night meetings with many of the major oligarchs, his old school friends, to discuss policy with them, and that Mikhail Khodorkovsky, the former Yukos head, scorned the meetings, and that's one of the reasons that he is currently serving a prison term.
Absolutely. And when Putin came to power in 2000, he said, you can keep your money, your wealth, if you stay out of politics. And Khodorkovsky had greater ambitions.
Have you covered security in the country, specifically the Chechen conflict?
I've never specifically covered the Chechen conflict. I was actually in Chechnya when in the early 90s, late 80s, when a man called Dudayev was president. And he had been head of the Soviet nuclear armed bomber force and was a truly crazy character. But then he was killed by the Russians.
It's my sense that some of the things that we're hearing today may have occurred during the Soviet era. We just wouldn't have heard about them because despite the clampdown on the press, there's still more stories coming out. The Washington Post ran a story last week about three Russian lawyers who were representing Hermitage Capital and an attempted raid that's forced two to flee to London, left a third in prison.
Yes, it's a very interesting story. Bill Browder was a great investor over in Russia and truly successful throughout the 90s, and then had his visa withdrawn for some reason that I'm not too clear about. But probably, I think if you work in Russia and you acknowledge your debt to Putin for doing so, then you're okay. But maybe he didn't.
Well, as you said earlier, Medvedev is a lawyer. He has lamented that his country has a kind of a legal nihilism.
That's a very interesting expression, isn't it? Legal nihilism. I mean, its legal system is completely corrupt.
He's saying there.
Well, yeah. I mean, it is a totally corrupt legal system, and you cannot rely on getting a fair verdict, and it's one of the most corrupt countries in the world now.
Going back to your book, should I assume that when I read this book that 90% of it really happened? 95% of it really happened?
I think there's a large element of reality in the book. I wouldn't put a percentage on it.
For example, we read about foreign operatives coming to be trained by the Russians, including terrorists.
That's right, yes.
Russia is always decrying terrorists, or are they only decrying the people they call terrorists, the Chechens?
I think, yeah. I mean, one man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter, as they say. And Russia uses, you know, in a Cold War situation, Russia and America, too, would use anyone who can fight a proxy war against their enemy. And Russia does that, too.
So where do you go from here? Are you going to go back to writing nonfiction under your own name, or has the fiction bug caught you? And are you trapped now as somebody has to live under two different names?
Well, I've finished a second book called Moscow Sting, which is published in London in a couple of weeks.
The books will be published in England first. This one was published in England.
Yes, this was Red to Black was published last July, and and I think I'm plotting out a third novel in this sequence, and a film option has been bought of Red to Black. So I'm looking forward to writing the screenplay for that.
And Red to Black is published in this country by Echo. My great thanks to Alex Dryden, whoever he really is, for being our guest today. It's been a real pleasure talking with you.
Thank you very much.